All right, we might get started, everyone. Hopefully you all know that you're in the IFSA KPMG Lump Sum Risk Experience Investigation Update session, because you will very shortly. We have our two speakers, Wahbui and Brylan Cummings. The order of today will be they'll be speaking for about half an hour, and then we'll throw questions open to the floor, and if people can just come to the microphones at that time. Please just say your name into the microphone so you're recorded for prosperity. I'll give you a quick run-through. Brylan's a senior manager with KPMG Actuaries Life and Finance Division. She's a project manager of the IFSA KPMG Lump Sum Risk Investigation. Brylan has 10 years' experience in financial services, mainly in life insurance. Prior to joining KPMG, Brylan worked with AMP in Australia and NPI Life in the UK. Brylan has broad experience in life insurance, financial reporting, product development, valuation and unit pricing. Brylan's been a member of the Life Risk Committee of the Institute of Actuaries since 2004 and was involved with the last Institute Morbidity Study. Brylan was also a member of the Risk Capital Task Force, which has recently submitted a proposal to APRA. Wahbui is a director of KPMG Actuaries Life and Finance Division. She's in charge of the IFSA KPMG Lump Sum Risk Studies from the KPMG perspective. Wah has over 20 years' experience in financial services, mainly in life insurance. Prior to joining KPMG, Wah has worked with a number of major risk riders, including ACNL, AXA and Tower Life. Wah has broad experience in life insurance financial reporting, product development, valuation and provision of specialist audit actuarial advice on a number of KPMG's insurance and wealth management clients. Wah has a special interest in disability income and risk products, experience studies, product rationalisation, and since 2004 in accounting standards development. Wah was a member of the Disability Committee of the Institute of Actuaries for 6 years and a member of the Life Risk Committee until 2004. Just for interest, I'm not sure if I can see in the audience, but Emma Grange is also here from IFSA, up the back waving to the right. And we also have two other people who a lot of the people involved in the studies may not have met but just spoken to over the phone. Joseph Chan from KPMG Actuaries over there, who was the programmer and has liaised with a lot of client companies on the actual data submissions, as well as Agnes Wong sitting in the middle. So I'll hand over to Wah to take you through from here.
Thank you, James, and welcome to the session. It is a great pleasure for me to present this study to the profession, mainly because it has been a long time since we've had one of these on an industry basis. As you know, the last study was published in 2004, and it covers experience up until 1999, which is almost 10 years now. In 2008, IFSA decided that it would rally the support for the industry study, and it started with a lump sum risk. What IFSA did was it actually specified the scope and it tendered the study, and KPMG has picked up as the partner of IFSA to perform the investigation according to the scope. It is an ongoing investigation. And the first instalment of it has been completed. The report is out to all the participating companies. So hopefully you should already have your copy of the report. But today we're presenting the result to the general public at large and the profession. Some of you would already see a much longer version of this. So before I start, if I could get people who've seen the longer version to give me a hand shown so that I can see how many have seen it before. So not that many people in the audience have seen it. The update will have two parts. The first part, I will take about 20 to 25 minutes to actually take you through the result of the study. I won't have time to take you through all of the result, but just the key result. And then Brylan Cummings, my colleague, will take you through the result of a survey that we sent out to all the participants earlier this month, last month actually, and it will show you what people thought of the study and also how they are going to use it or how they intend to use it. So without further ado, I'd like to take you through the scope of the study. The scope is important to set the scene of why we do certain things the way we do and for you to understand the context of the result. The study cover initially only a single year, 2007, and it covers mortality, trauma and total and permanent disablement risk sold in retail business, not group business. It covers Australian business only, and although we collect both substandard and standard lives, the result that you're going to see would only cover standard lives. And this time we've got 15 direct writers contributing to the data out of a possible 24 life officers registered with APRA. Now, it might seem a low percentage, but five of those missing are actually reinsurers, so we don't need to double up. And the other four either don't write risk business or have just entered the market. So I think it's fair to say that we've got the vast majority of the data. There are two key differences with the last study. Firstly, this study doesn't include annuity and it doesn't include conventional. And the reason for excluding those products is to concentrate on getting an up-to-date result out for the open products that most life risks are still writing, and that's term insurance. When I say term insurance, it's really term insurance sold either standalone or with an investment product or traditional business or in master trusts. So it is, in effect, what most risk writers write these days. Two other features of the study that I should mention. Firstly, that we are going to, for the first time, present results for deaths with riders. Previously, only death-only mortality was examined. And secondly, partly because we only have 1 year of experience in this study, we've decided to add the IBNR allowance onto the actual claims. Otherwise, it's very difficult to interpret trauma and TPD. I know you just want to see the result, but I do want to just make two mentions very quickly. Firstly, the actual claims is claims incurred in 2007, and it has been increased by an allowance for IBNR, as I said before. The IBNR allowance has been based on a study that we do for this study specifically, and it is 1.8% for death, 10.2% for trauma, and 59% for TPD. So you could see that's why we needed to add it back, because it is a substantial percentage of the actual claims. We also have a decline rate calculator for each company, but it is company specific, and so we're not able to disclose them. The expected, as you would expect it, it is the latest standard table that is available. So for death only, it's IA 95-97, for male and female, ultimate. But we've chosen to compare both death only and death with riders with the same table so that you can easily see the relativity between them. Trauma table is, we've used the Fabrizio and Gratton table, which is, I know it has been updated internally for their client, but it is still the latest available publicly to the public to use. We haven't allowed for two things, and I just want to mention them. Firstly, we haven't allowed for the 14 or 30 days mortality after the trauma diagnosis, because there is 14 or 30 days, whereas before it was just mostly 28 days in the market. And secondly, we haven't made allowance for the deferment period for some of the conditions. So, for example, some policies might have 90 days wait. We haven't allowed for that, and that's consistent with the practice from the last study. For TPD, there's no real retail table, so we've used Martin 1995, which is a group risk table, but it is still it's still better than not having any table, and it is the last table that was used in the last study. A quick look at the data before we go to result, and I promise this is going to be the last one. For 2007, we've collected just under 4 million of policy years exposed to risk. I use the word policy year very deliberately because we know that many of our contributors cannot tell whether or not a person has more than one policy. And in terms of number of claims, we've got 6,420 claims. That's a lot more exposed to risk than the equivalent number from the last study. And I'll explain some of that driver. Firstly, we're counting deaths with riders, and that account for about 1 million of policy years. Our trauma claims has basically increased significantly from just under 800 to 1,500. But the most interesting feature is that death only has a lot more claims than before. It has 4,200 claims compared to 1,600. And if you look at the increase in the exposed to risk hasn't increased all that much. And that difference is explained by two major factors. One is that we've now included a number of products that wasn't included before, including consumer credit, loan protection, funeral plans, and accidental death. But the major driver of that difference in the number of claims is that the portfolio has aged a lot since the last study. In the last study, about two-thirds of the portfolio is under age 45, and now about two-thirds is over age 45. Now, finally, to the result. There is many ways we can cut the result, and I've chosen just a few cuts to show you because I think most people would have interest in these. This one is the ultimate mortality of term insurance with premiums that can be reviewed. So not level premium and not guaranteed premiums. You could see male is 78% of expected for durations 2 and over, and female is 83%. And that's an improvement of just over 1% for every year since the last study. It's consistent with the population trends that we've seen, which is that male mortality has improved faster than female's mortality. We've also looked at the same numbers for duration 5+, and the messages are very similar, and I haven't shown you the numbers. In this slide, we look at mortality by duration. Now, I just want to take a minute to explain the structure of the graph because you'll see a lot of these graph in the next 10 minutes. Most of the time, not all of the time, but most of the time, a blue area is for males and pink is for female. We're being very stereotyped here, I know. But you'll notice that the observation is in the middle of a range, right? The middle line is actually the observation itself, and the two lines on the two sides is the standard deviation on the two sides of it. And the reason we've shown the result that way is so you can have a feel for how credible the data is at each of the points. So in this graph, the average experience for male is shown as the red line, and it's about 78, which you saw before. And both graphs clearly show that there's significantly lower experience in the first 2 years of the policy. Here we look at experience by age, by sex, separately. And what we're looking for is whether or not the improvement has been evenly achieved over the ages. If it was, then what you're expecting is the range, the observations, to be sitting on top of this red line. Because we're showing the observation by age in this graph, but you could see that the blue graph is not sitting on top of that red line. It's actually showing a decreasing trend by age. And that tells us that The mortality by age for male has changed. Shape, but if you look at the female, it is pretty much sitting on top of that red line. So it's saying mortality shape for male, for female hasn't changed. This is the graph where blue doesn't mean male, it actually means female. In this graph, what we've shown is, in the blue graph, we've shown female mortality against male mortality. And so in this case, expected is male mortality for both male and female. And then we've taken the ratio. And the dark purple behind is last time. What we're looking for is if the red line is under 100%, it's telling us that female mortality is lower than male mortality, which it is clearly all the way for all ages. So this is telling us that even though mortality for male has improved faster than female, the female mortality is still clearly below male mortality. That number is actually 75%. Smoker and non-smoker. This graph confirmed that for both male and female, the smoker of the same age is experiencing much higher mortality than the non-smoker. And the differential is roughly consistent with what was shown in the last investigation, which is around the 200% mark. The interesting feature in this graph is that for ages older than 65, that differential is a lot less than 200%, or appears to be a lot less. So the very high level findings of the death-only results are that it confirms a number of items that we have seen in the last study. It confirms that mortality continued to improve with time, but at a much lower rate this time. If you remember, that rate was about 3% for male and 1% for female, and this time it is around the 1% for both. Male continued to improve faster than female, but continued to have much higher mortality than female. It confirms selection effect for the first 2 years, but no selection effect for after 2 years. And it confirms smoker experience, much higher experience than non-smoker of the same age. I guess the news in the study is that the shape of mortality by age for male has changed, but there's no such change. No such change is obvious in the female experience. Now I would like to show you the result for death cover sold with riders. That's cover that is sold with trauma or TPD, where TPD and trauma is an accelerated benefit, not a standalone benefit. In this graph, we've shown the dark colours is the death-only experienced, and the horizontal axis is actual to expected. So it's saying what you saw before, death-only is 78 and 83 for male and female separately, and by contrast, death with riders is much lower, significantly lower. For male, it is in the 40s, and for female, it is in the 30s. So these percentages show you the death with rider experience as a percentage of the death only, is showing 57% for male and 38% for females. Now we get to trauma experience. Trauma experience has been shown on this table in aggregate. And you could see for both male and female, it is significantly lower than the study's result from the last study. And we looked at this And we asked many of the contributors to actually look at their data again. And we got confirmation that the sign-off still stands. So here you are. This is what the data actually say. It is surprising to us, I guess. That's imply a rate of improvement of over 4% for every year since the last study. But here you are. That's the result. It's always interesting to see what's causing the claims to occur. And in this graph, we show the composition of the top four causes is a percentage of the top four. And you could see for male, cancer is an increasing percentage of the big four, and heart attack is a reducing causes of the big four, which is consistent with what we see in the population generally. But for female, there's no news. Basically, cancer dominates, and it's continued to be over 90% of the big four claims by number. We look at duration experience for mortality, and in trauma experience, what we look for is slightly differently. We're looking for whether or not there is evidence of anti-selection, because in the last study, there was very strong evidence of anti-selection in the trauma experience, especially for female. But this time, you could see that the average line pretty much sit within that pink and blue area. So that suggests that there is not a lot of evidence or anti-selection or selection. However, I will mention, when I talk about the expected decrement for four, I said we didn't allow for a number of things. We didn't allow for the deferment period, and we didn't allow for the mortality. The effect of that is to slightly overstate the expected. But even if you move these a couple of percent, it is hard to see how these graphs could show strong anti-selection or selection. Perhaps you can tell me what you think it tells you. This graph is shown because we think it shows an interesting trend in the age pattern in similar way to the what we saw in mortality. And I want you to ignore the level of this graph. Just look at the shape of it. The reason why I say that is because there was a significant change in the trauma data this time around. Last time there were over 50% of claims classified as other causes, but this time only 20% of the data was classified as other causes. And so in absolute level, if you just look at the big four, these ratios seems to be very low, but I think just from our discussion with the companies, the reason why the last study result for the big four was very low was probably because many claims was actually classified as others when people don't know what they are. Whereas we've spent a lot of time this time around asking companies to actually look them up if they don't know. One company resubmit their data because the initial submission had everybody in others and no heart attack and no cancer. So, but if you look at the shape of it, this is clearly saying in the current experience, the shape is completely different for female, for male, than compared to the last study. Even more significantly different, I think, compared to the mortality change. So in summary, what does the study tell us about trauma experience? Trauma experience has continued to improve since the standard table and the last study. The shape by age for male has changed very substantially for the big four compared to the standard table and the last study. there is a lot less anti-selection evidence in the female experience, and cancer continued to be the headline dominant causes of trauma claims. Now we come to this slide, which I would say is the best-selling slide, because I think Brylan got 13 or 14 phone calls after we showed these slides last time. Everybody wants to know where they sit in that graph. This graph shows you where each company individual experience sits compared to the average. The average in this graph is the 100% mark, and each of these dots represent one company. Now, to make sure that we don't show the really small company with a lot of fluctuations, we've made sure that only company with more than 40 claims are included. So the range that you see here is actually probably showing you the range of experience in the market. This is probably one where I should read out the... You could see, actually, that the top company can be, for trauma, for instance, 100% or more than 100% of the bottom company. We only had 158 TBD claims submitted to us this time, because one large company could not supply the TBD claims. So I didn't do a lot of analysis on it, but I thought this slide is worth showing. It's showing you actual to expected by occupation class. Now, the first comment is there's a lot of unknown occupation. So take it with a grain of salt, but even with the rest of the data, you could see there's a very clear correlation between occupation and TBD experience. I will mention, though, that in this actual to expected, we have been standardising it by age and by sex, but we haven't standardised it by anything else. So, for instance, smoking status. If you look at the data underneath it, smokers account for 25% of the heavy blue occupations, but it only accounts for 10% of the white collar experience. So you need to consider that when you interpret this result. And that concludes my presentation of the key result for the study. I will now ask my colleague, Brylan Cummings, to come and present to you the result of the survey, which we conducted last month.
Thank you, Hua. We're running a bit behind, so in order to leave enough time for questions, I'm going to be skipping some of my slides, so apologies for that. In February this year, we released the full report, which was a massive document like this, a good store stop, containing 160 pages of data appendices, and similarly companies that had contributed their own data received the same 160 pages of data with their own company results. In March, when companies only had this for a fortnight, we decided to actually ask companies how, if they'd used it already and how they were intending to use it, to see if companies were getting value out of the investment that they'd made. The first question we asked was whether the IFSA results were what they expected. The mortality of the majority of companies said that the results were as they expected. This varied a little bit from what we thought, because we were expecting that the results were a bit heavier than what we thought. For trauma, most companies thought the results were lighter than they were thinking. As Hua alluded to earlier, this matched our own thoughts, where we'd actually gone back to companies and asked them to check their data. One of the survey respondents suggested that perhaps the error lay in the IBNR assessment and that the IBNR should have been heavier. The TPD results, also companies said they came out about the same level they expected, which matched our own thoughts on the TPD. We asked companies to have a think about how they're going to use the study. Unsurprisingly, the top two results were quite low. This is due to the fact the companies recognised the fact it was only a single-year study and therefore the credibility of the results is yet to be proven. Despite the fact that they were still doubtful over the credibility, however, companies seem to have taken into account the broad message that the shape of the curve has changed and therefore the rating factors may no longer be applicable. And this is shown in the last two results on the slide, which is showing companies questioning the value of the rating factors and also thinking that new standard tables might be required. We asked companies to rate on a scale of 0 to 10 how important each of the standard tables was. On average, companies believe that a new standard table is more important to the industry than it is to their own company. I don't know if everyone's very altruistic or if this is due to the fact that the survey respondents were dominated towards bigger companies rather than smaller companies. The outstanding result was the demand for a new trauma table. 9 respondents rated a new trauma table either a 9 or 10 in importance, and all respondents rated it a 6 or over, indicating that they had a substantial level of interest in a new table. This is not surprising given that it's a 1994 table for Fabrizio and Grattan, and I think Eddie Fabrizio is leading the charge for wanting a new standard table for trauma. Next was TPD, where the standard table is Martin 1995 and is based on group life data rather than retail. So it's not surprising there's quite a strong demand there for a new standard table. 6 out of the respondents rated a 9 or 10 in importance and 12 of the respondents rated a 6 or over. Similarly, mortality bringing up the rear was still quite a high level of interest in a new standard table, with once again 6 respondents rating it a 9 or 10 in importance and 12 rating it a 6 or over. We somewhat cheekily asked companies if they'd had the chance to compare the study results to their own internal studies. Given they'd only had the studies for a fortnight, we thought that they might be quite low. 5 companies out of the 10 companies who responded to the survey and had contributed data had already done a comparison to their internal studies, which I think is quite an amazing result. And the remaining companies, it was due to a matter of time, not intent, that they hadn't done the comparison. Generally, the results were sort of showing similar things to what we expected, that their internal studies were showing lighter mortality, that they definitely weren't showing lighter trauma, and that the TPD result was about what they expected. We were quite reassured to find out that majority of companies where their internal study showed a different result to the IFSA study intend to investigate the difference. And we know that companies where they have done that have actually found out very interesting things about their own data and have been telling us about it. And that's one of the great benefits, I think, from this study, is that companies come to understand their own data much better and so can use it in a more intelligent manner. Finally, we asked companies how they were thinking of using the studies in the future, because this is obviously an ongoing exercise. I was relieved to find out that no companies thought of no use whatsoever or purely as a box-ticking exercise. The importance of the benchmarking I was aware of very soon after we did the presentation in January to companies, where, as Hua mentioned, I had the majority of industry phoning me up to find whereabouts on that pretty graph they sat. The use of the study as an internal check on their own study, I discussed on the previous slide. The use instead of an internal study is quite an interesting one. The companies that have responded to this and said they intend to use it was where they felt their own data wasn't good enough in certain areas, and so in those areas they intend to rely upon the industry study rather than their own data. Given that a lot of companies are saying that they want to wait for the IFSA, they want to wait to get the results confirmed before they take any actions, when might they be waiting too? We're currently collecting data for a retrospective study which is from 2004 to 2006, and those results will be released in August or September this year. And then the first of our ongoing studies will be done later this year, collecting data for a study going from 2006 to 2008. We'll start collecting data in September this year. Thank you very much.
We don't have very long, since we're about to duck off to lunch, but maybe if anyone with some burning questions can jump to the microphone, just say their name and fire away.
I just wondered whether you had any thoughts on the difference in the mortality between the death with riders and the straight death policies, why there was such a big difference.
Sorry, can I just clarify the question? Is the question, why is the death with rider so much lower than death only? Yeah. I can give you my theory. It's because when you have trauma or TPD already occurring, and they always occur first, because you have to be alive to have trauma or TPD, then the person doesn't have the opportunity to claim the death benefit. So we're always pricing with that in mind anyway, but to my knowledge, we've never had objective evidence that the difference, how much the difference is, and that the difference is so big, I think. That was certainly my observation when I first saw the result. I know that people were pricing a differential, but to see it actually backed up by some hard data is the first time, I think, and it's also the magnitude of it is quite surprising.
Did I see on one of your graphs that the companies had a 4% improvement, yet the industry only had a 1% improvement? Is that...
The industry had a 1% improvement for death only and a 4% improvement for trauma, so you might have just got a little those two numbers a bit confused.
Any more? I'll give a chance for a final question from the floor. Sure.
With some of these studies, I often wonder just how much of an influence underwriting is as a factor, because my feeling is that underwriting's improved significantly, particularly in trauma, in the area of trauma, because essentially the products become more established and hence underwriting and methods are more established. I just wonder whether you had any thoughts on how much of an influence that could perhaps be having on the results.
It's a very interesting question. Lots of people in the industry are interested in it. One of the feedback we had when I did the survey was a lot of companies were interested in seeing their results by underwriting status. We actually collected the results by underwriting status. However, I know from having spoken to many companies that the underwriting status field was not reliable. So when we did any analysis by underwriting status, the results just didn't make any sense. It does logically follow, though, that improvements in underwriting should lead to better results. And a lot of companies are interested in whether the advent of electronic underwriting, where how that compares to the old sort of personal forms. Unfortunately, we don't have any hard evidence at this point to back it up.
All right, we might call that an end to the session today. Wire and Brylan will obviously be at lunch and will be dying and keen to answer all of your questions if you didn't feel like grabbing the floor in front of the whole auditorium. So please feel free to approach them over lunch. And if you could join me in giving a warm round of applause to our presenters, Wabui.